This podcast is a part of the Wildcat Podcast Network. But no, this is the episode 6 of Popcat, and I want to thank Griffin, my guest for the episode, for joining me.
Hi, yeah, I'm Griffin Presnell. I've been talking to Andrew about coming on this show for a while. Happy to be here.
It feels finally good to actually, like, get it going, like, because there have been plenty of, like, hypothetical episodes where I talk to people about, like, we definitely need to do an episode about this. And I do, like out of the 5 episodes I've done already, I haven't really done any gaming-centric episodes. Like, they've been topics, but, like, a whole episode hasn't been about gaming yet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure of that. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to talk about with pop culture. But I'm pretty well-versed in gaming, so I could talk about this for a while, yeah.
Right, but why don't you give the people a bit of background?
My name's Griffin. I was born in Griffin Presnell, born in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Likes long walks on the beach.
If there were beaches in Lincoln, maybe. I am a bachelor, while we're talking about long walks on the beach. I'm a gamer, that's why I'm a bachelor. I've been playing video games since I was probably in the 2nd grade. I remember being 7 years old and one of my older brothers giving me a copy of Pokemon, I think it was Fire Red, for my old blue Game Boy Advance SP.
Was that the first game you played?
That's the first game I remember playing. And I remember the next day my other older brother beating me up and taking it back.
I guess to get a basis, what would you say is, like, your favorite genre of game?
My favorite genre? I'm a pretty big RPG guy. I really like the really long, really, really complex stories. Most of my favorite games are probably RPGs. You've got Pokemon Conquest, which is a DS game. It was a spinoff of Pokemon that was more based around, like, tactics.
Right.
So that it's a really fun one. I highly recommend it to anyone. One of my favorite games of the past few years is one called Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age. Echoes of an Elusive Age, yeah. It's a very long name.
Is that a Switch game?
It just came out for everything.
Really?
It started out as a PS4 game, and then they put it on the Switch, and they, like, added more content, made the name even longer. And then they took that version and just, I think a couple months ago, came to Xbox and PS4.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, and also, just to give the people a little bit of a basis, what would you say your favorite game series is?
Favorite game series? Oof. I mean, I know people are going to make fun of me for this, but I'm always going to be happy when a new Pokemon game comes out.
Of course, it's nostalgic.
Oh, yeah, I'm always going to... I remember when Pokemon Sword and Shield came out, say what you will about it. That was all I did for a whole weekend. Just played through that entire game.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess the first topic we're going to start with, are you pro or anti pre-ordering games?
It really depends. Sometimes if I see a really cool, like, pre-order bonus, I'll be down to pre-order a game. Sometimes if I really like a game series, like, for example, I really like Fire Emblem games also.
Right.
Fire Emblem is, of course, the series that is overrepresented in Smash Bros. To some people. when the newest one, Fire Emblem Three Houses, came out, I was very excited for it, and so I pre-ordered the collector's edition.
Right.
So I think those are ones that I think I'm for pre-ordering, mostly just because you get all the stuff with it. It's more for the commodity of having the big collector's thing.
So do you think you, like, what you're saying is you won't pre-order a game if there's no added, like collectible, like a physical item?
Sometimes I will. It just depends if I want it, if I, like, want to play that game. I definitely understand people waiting. I usually actually, whenever I pre-order a game, it's usually going to be, like, the week before. Usually after all the reviews have come out,
right,
is when I start to formulate my opinion. I'm really thinking about pre-ordering. They're re-releasing Mario 3D World for the Switch. I really loved that game on the Wii U, and having a way to play it on the go would be cool. But there really hasn't been any cool pre-order bonus in the West. There's been really cool steelbooks, like, everywhere else.
Right.
Just not in America, and it doesn't make sense to me.
No, the steelbook is something I'm a big, I'll probably have to do a whole episode about that, like physical media versus digital media.
Oh yeah, I would come on for that too. I love.
But I definitely lean towards having physical games.
Yeah.
Because if you want to be technical about it, like you don't really own the digital versions. Like you're kind of leasing the game from them.
Yeah. If I can get a digital, if I can get a digital, or if I can get a game physically, I will get it physically.
Right.
One of the main reasons I do pre-order, like, nowadays is because, you know, we live in a town where there is nowhere to go buy video games.
Right.
That isn't, like, 45 minutes away. So, like, I could see if a friend could drive me to, like, the GameStop in Norfolk, 40 minutes away. Or I could just, you know, have Amazon deliver it to me the day it comes out.
Right, and I think that is the biggest proponent of digital games is convenience.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's convenient because there have been times where for example, I pre-ordered Cyberpunk and I didn't want to do it physically because I wanted to be able to play it the moment it came out.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
With talking about Cyberpunk, we kind of have to talk about the full backlash it got.
Now, I do have to say that is a pretty poor pre-order story. But it is not as bad as my worst.
Ooh, go for it.
I remember it going out to GameStop at midnight and buying a PS4 specifically because I pre-ordered No Man's Sky. If you played No Man's Sky at launch, you definitely know that that is not a good story.
What did you think about the fact, like, that is one of the big, like, people are thinking what happened with No Man's Sky is kind of what happened, what'll happen with Cyberpunk, and it'll be a playable, like, they'll perfect it, and it'll be what they promise.
I definitely hope so. I did not pre-order Cyberpunk, actually. I was thinking about it, but maybe when they make, like, the big PS5 pretty version, I'll get it.
No, that's what I'm thinking also, because, I don't know. It's just, like, I don't think I said before, I'm anti-pre-order.
Yeah.
Even though I pre-order sometimes, like, it has to be a game I'm really excited about to for me to really want to, like, sink my teeth in and pre-order it early.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because the fact that I pre-ordered Cyberpunk, I like the fact that I got to download it, like, a couple of days before it actually released. So, like, you wouldn't have to wait, and you're able to jump right directly into it.
Oh, yeah. There's a YouTuber I really like called Scott the Waz. He does video game content on YouTube. He made a really informative video about pre-ordering,
right,
stuff like that.
But no, I do get why a lot of people are anti-pre-order, because you could look at it as, like, in some cases, you are not getting anything. Like, you're getting, like, I owe you a game.
Yeah.
And that's, like, I could get why people think that. Games that I've pre-ordered that I was really jazzed about, where I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to put money down. It was Cyberpunk and Batman Arkham Knight.
Arkham Knight?
Which was another game that had a bit of controversy.
Yeah. I liked Arkham Knight. I got it a while after. Like I said, I didn't get a PS4 till No Man's Sky came out.
Right.
So I got Arkham Knight after a while, but I liked it. I definitely had fun with it. The story was very predictable, but
right. But you didn't buy Cyberpunk, did you?
No, I have not bought it yet.
And you can't anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't buy it off PlayStation.
That was something I was really surprised about, because I played Witcher 3 and I really enjoyed it. And I really, so much so that I went back and played Witcher 2, and I was like, all right, this is kind of a dependable studio. It's a small studio, CDPR. And I don't know, just the fact, like people definitely knew stuff was going on with the fact, like, they kept pushing it back.
Yeah.
And then you kept hearing, like, all these insider whispers about, like, oh, maybe it's not ready yet. And having completed the game, it's undercooked. It wasn't ready.
Yeah. I remember when, like, it first came out. And everyone was, like, sharing a bunch of funny, like, videos of all the glitches. People were like, well, you know, The Witcher 3 was like this for the first few months that it was out. And I was like,
not like Cyberpunk.
Yeah, why would they release that?
Because, I really enjoy CD Projekt Red. And I really, like, I'm going through a second playthrough of Cyberpunk to do all the stuff that I didn't do before.
Yeah, I mean, call me old-fashioned, but I like when game companies release their game finished and weren't able to rely on updates.
Right. the next thing I wanted to talk about in terms of people being angry at companies, Microsoft and Xbox announced that they were going up in price for Xbox Live Gold.
Yeah, yeah. I did not hear about this until you told me, because you told me like some of the topics we were going to go over on this podcast. And I looked into it, and yeah, they're like doubling in price.
Yeah, they made a lot of people angry.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doing that, because I've... like, gold has always been $60, like, even back, like, for a year. Because even back when I played on the Xbox 360 from about middle school to, like, in my middle school area, it was very, like, it was affordable, like, $60. That was the price of a game at the time. So it's just, like, you could get a free, get $60 and get free games throughout the year. And also play and talk with your friends. But the downside was you also had to have gold for free-to-play games. So with all the backlash they had, they were like, okay, we're not going to make 1 year of Xbox Live Gold $120. And they also removed the stipulation that you need gold for free-to-play games. So somebody could play Warzone and Fortnite and all these other games without Xbox Live Gold.
That's good. That's good. At least they're doing that.
That was definitely a move in the right direction, but yeah. It was definitely damage control.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of damage control. I think PlayStation's sitting real pretty right now, thinking about their next step. Because I do feel like now that Xbox has done this, Xbox drawn the line in the sand, PlayStation is going to increase their price a little bit too.
Right, and even though they walked it back and they were like, we're not going to do this. And I'm, like, in my opinion, the damage is already done for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I could definitely see that. People are definitely mad. I remember when this was announced, PlayStation was trending on Twitter because everyone was saying they were going to migrate over there.
Right.
That this is the straw that broke the camel's back.
And I was definitely, like, I was thinking, I was like, all right, PlayStation won the last generation. And now, like, Microsoft just handed it to PlayStation.
I mean, plus Xbox. Did Xbox really have any really big game in the last generation? I mean, they had Cuphead, I guess.
Right.
Cuphead for a while, at least.
Because even now, like, Halo Infinite, that was supposed to come out on launch. And then, like, they changed directors and, like, they moved stuff around. And now it's coming back at a later date.
Yeah.
So I think Microsoft, even though they have bought, like, a lot of game studios and indie studios, and, like, one of the biggest ones they got was, they purchased was Bethesda.
Yeah, they did purchase Bethesda. I remember that. That was a crazy move.
And it is, like, exactly like you said, it's a crazy move, because it'll be surprising to see if, like, they make Fallout and Elder Scrolls Xbox exclusive.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I remember a big one that they purchased a couple years ago, Double Fine Entertainment. Have you ever heard of these guys?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they've got Psychonauts 2 coming out.
Right.
Which I'm very excited for. I loved the first Psychonauts.
I haven't played it, but I know it's like, it's on everybody's like, oh, you haven't played that, like, it's everybody's nostalgia. Like, games can be great, and here's a great one.
Yeah, Psychonauts is a lot of fun. It's a do you know what it's about?
I do, yes.
Yeah, you, like, go to a psychic summer camp. It's like a 3D collectathon. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And you, like, go into people's heads, and you, like, through their, like, mental trauma, you help them through it. It's not as deep and emotional as it sounds. It's a very silly game.
Right.
There is a character who is the guard of an asylum, and he's just this crazy conspiracy theorist. So you go into his head, and his head is like this 50s-era-looking street, and like there were spies everywhere who are like these robots trying to break into his mind.
Right.
Because that's how he sees the world.
But no, I played, and I forget what the name was called. But no, the dude who runs that studio, he's like, it's weird. It's like when film directors are like they'll stay put and not make anything for a while, and then they're just like, all right, I'm ready to make another
I'm just ready
movie.
To make another
like,
classic.
Like this, the dude who's the head director for Double Fine.
I'm blanking on
his
name.
It's Tim something, isn't
Tim
it?
Tim something, yeah. Tim Schafer.
Tim Schafer. Tim Every Schafer. Time, like, he, like, all the games he decides, like, okay, I'm going to make a game. Like, it's, like, 3 to 4 years in between, or even 5.
Yeah.
And then he's just, like, all the games are incredibly different.
Yeah. Here's a game about, you know, psychic kids at a summer camp. Here's a game about Jack Black riding around in a heavy metal land.
Exactly. And I played, I can't remember the name of it, but it was like a point-and-click adventure.
Day of the Tentacle?
No. It was Elijah Wood voiced
Broken Age?
Yes.
Yes.
And I didn't complete it, but I was like, it's a decent game, and I feel like this would be a good intro for like people who like can't really get into like first-person shooters or fighters or stuff like that, because it's very palatable, easy to swallow, and it's point-and-click, and it's pretty much like a moving story that you control.
My favorite point-and-click game by Double Fine is Grim Fandango.
Great
game. I highly recommend that one. Yeah. So, but, you know, we're speaking of, you know, Psychonauts 2 and all these big games that are coming out this year. Do you have any that you're really excited for? Like, what are some of your biggest games you're excited for 2021?
One of the top ones that I'm excited for is called Deathloop.
Deathloop, yes, I've heard of it.
And it's made by Arkane Studios, the same studio that made Dishonored and Prey.
Yeah.
And that's another studio where I'm like, all right, my wallet's with them. Because I just got Prey, and I started kind of playing it and getting into it. But I'm like, it's definitely a game I need to complete.
Yeah.
Like, everything they make is perfect, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. One game I'm really excited for, hopefully it comes out 2021. Might not. Shin Megami Tensei 5.
All right.
Shin Megami Tensei is a very big IP in Japan. It's made by a studio called Atlus, owned by Sega. Shin Megami Tensei, it's most famous for the spin-off series. It has Persona. Yes,
okay.
People are aware of like Persona 5 because it's everywhere now. You know, the big one was they put the main character Joker in Smash.
Right.
But Shin Megami Tensei was the original series. Essentially what it is like it is an adult's Pokemon. You know, adults who play Pokemon wish that it was harder, had more mature themes. They're just looking for Shin Megami Tensei.
Right.
They said they were going to release it this year. And a big deal was that they announced that it would have a worldwide release. Now, Atlus is very infamous for not keeping their promise on release dates. Persona 5 came out in 2017, I think, and it was announced that it was coming out in 2012.
Oof.
So, hopefully, well, Shin Megami Tensei 5 was announced all the way back in 2017. It was announced with the Switch. It was announced at like a Switch showcase where they showed off Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey, and it is the only game that was shown there to have not come out yet. So I definitely do have faith that it could come out this year, and if not next year.
Right. Another thing I wanted to get your opinion on is live gaming services, whatever you want to call it, because WB, just like WB Gaming side of things, announced that the rumors of the Batman games that are going to be coming out, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, and then another, like, Gotham Knights game. The rumor is they're looking towards more live service games, kind of like Destiny and things like that, where it's just like, odds are you're going to spend more than $60 on it.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, you can kind of tell how I feel about it a bit, but I'm not the biggest proponent of that structure.
Yeah, I used to be really into that stuff. When I was in high school, I probably bought Overwatch 3 times over in loot boxes. And just one day I was like, wait, this is dumb. And I don't spend money on loot boxes really anymore.
Right. Like, I tried to, like, I don't know. I feel like when companies are just like, okay, we're making a live service game, they're just basically advertising, like, we would like to make money more than just release a standard single player or multiplayer game.
Yeah,
because they're just like, oh, we're constantly taking money from you every month.
Yeah. DLC, I can enjoy DLC. I can enjoy the occasional, like, you know, an expansion, a story expansion.
Right.
But I don't really like a lot of that. Like, you have to buy in-game credits to get the special, like, weapons, especially when it's, like, play-to-win or pay-to-win.
Right. And, like, a kind of the biggest example of it, in my opinion, is Bethesda Game Studios. Because with Elder Scrolls Online and Fallout 76, I'm like, they're too busy working on that. So they're not going to work on, like, they're busy trying to keep those games up and running as a service when, like, they're just like, okay, we're going to kick the can of all these games people actually want us to make down the road.
Yeah.
And another big offender of that is Rockstar with GTA Online and Red Dead Online.
Yep. What do you think is Rockstar's next big project? Do you think it's GTA 6?
It has to be.
I hope it is.
The fact that they were like, okay, we're separating Red Dead Online into its own big thing, and they're giving it such a big push. I'm like, in every couple of months, it's just like GTA 6 is trending on Twitter. And I'm just like, I don't want to hear anybody else say anything unless it's coming from Rockstar's mouth.
Yeah, GTA 6 is what I'm expecting, what I'm hoping, but there's that little piece in the back of my mind that wants a bully too.
Right. Then that was one I was like, they should and they don't even, like, Rockstar has so many studios in different locations. I was like, just do what every other studio does and separate your team and maybe have, okay, this, or like Rockstar Montreal is going to make a Bully remake, and then this studio is going to make a Bully 2.
Yeah.
And then, well, the main Rockstar, like, family is going to make GTA 6.
Yeah. Even if they just remade or remastered the original Bully, I think it would be a lot of fun. I think it'd be worth the price of admission.
But no, in all honesty, I'm really not the biggest fan of the direction Rockstar is going, because like I said, like, it really slows down everything, mucks up the works for what things are being made. And you could argue, like, oh, this isn't actually a hindrance to the studio, but I'm willing to bet, like, a lot of things in Red Dead 2's development got slowed down because they were working on GTA Online.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, I remember when they had that first, like, big PS5 event, and everyone was excited, and they saw that Rockstar logo, and then they heard Michael go, "Why'd I get into this?"
Yeah,
and everyone just...
No, when I saw that, I was like... And I was like, no, they deserve the...
They deserve being clowned on.
Yeah, they deserve being clowned on like that, because I'm just like, no, you can't, like... GTA 5 is making it... has made it onto three different console generations.
You cannot come to the premiere of the next big generation and just say,
we're playing the
We're doing the PS3 game again.
No, but in all honesty, like, I think if Red Dead, if GTA Online wasn't as big as it was, they would have never done that.
Yeah.
But no, what's another game you're looking forward to this year?
Another game I'm really looking forward to, Resident Evil 8. Oh, man. That's going to be a good one.
Oh, yeah.
I saw that big live stream they had. What was it, last week?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's going to be something real big. People really liked 7. 7 was a really good step in the right direction after 5 and 6.
Right.
Have
you played any of the remakes?
Remakes? I have played... I really want to play the first one. The first game got remade for the GameCube.
I have not played that remake because it's also on, like, Xbox and stuff.
Yeah, they've remastered it.
And it's definitely, like, it's good, like, and it's a great remaster, but compared to 2 and 3, or at least 2 remake. Yeah.
I would say that the first one, just from what I've seen, like, they added all of the stuff they weren't able to put into the PS1 game. You know, I would say content wise, it's better than these two.
Right.
But I loved the Resident Evil 2 remake.
I did. I enjoyed it.
Just, and playing it with headphones so you could just hear Mr. X just stomping down the hallway.
No, because when that made it to the front page of Reddit and YouTube, and people were like, you'll hear him skulking his way to you. And I was like, okay.
Yeah,
and I remember when I first played it, I was terrified. And then I played it again, trying to get a better ranking by the end. And I did better. I definitely handled a lot of the bosses better, a lot of the encounters and the puzzles.
Yeah, I had one big problem with Resident Evil 3 Remake, and that was, it was very short.
Yes, I heard that. I wasn't able to buy it, but I have heard that.
I remember just playing through Resident Evil 2 Remake and having Mr. X just chase you down from anywhere in that police station. I was just like, oh my god, if they do this with Mr. X, just imagine what they're going to do with Nemesis. Because in Resident Evil 3, if you ever played the original one or if you knew anything about it, Nemesis was just this Terminator. Just right. This Terminator-like character, always hunting down Jill, always just popping out when you least expect him. And he was definitely, he was really there in the Resident Evil 3 remake. But, you know, he just wasn't there enough. And I think that's because of the game's length.
Right.
And the way it was structured. It feels a lot more level-based.
Because I have heard people say, like, this felt like Resident Evil Remake 2.5. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It would have been DLC for the first one.
Yeah, I borrowed it from my older brother. He's like, oh my gosh, you should play this. This is so great. And I beat it in one sitting. Took me about 6 hours to beat. But it is one of those games that's meant to be, like, replayed.
Right.
And I will say, what they did with Nemesis was really amazing. I will say, when he is there and when he is chasing you, there is a moment where you are on, like, a street. You're on a street just full of zombies, and Nemesis just jumps down, and it is just a giant sandbox for him to chase after you.
Right, and I'm definitely excited for Resident Evil 8 also, because Resident Evil 7 was what got me into the franchise.
Yeah.
Because I bought the RE1 remake, and I never played it, and then my roommate was playing Resident Evil 7, and I was like, you know what? I'll buy that too. So we're just playing it together. Like, we're playing a game. We have enough to talk about.
Yeah.
And he made it ahead of me in the game, so he knew where all the jump scares were. And I was definitely caught off guard because he'd stop playing, turn around to look at me play, and I was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Nothing. Just keep playing."
Yeah, I'm replaying Resident Evil 7 right now. I'm having a lot of fun with it. My favorite in the series is probably still 4. Have you ever played 4?
I've played a bit of 4.
4 is, I really love 4, and I'm really happy that Resident Evil 8 is bringing in a lot of the mechanics in 4 that I love.
Because Village, a lot of people, like, when they were like, oh, it's Village, they were like, it's going to be, like, a spiritual Resident Evil 4 sequel.
I remember when they announced Village, I texted my older brother afterwards, and I was like, me watching the Village trailer, oh, this looks like an alright horror game. I mean, you know, just looks a pretty standard, you know, set in a spooky town. And then they announce it's Resident Evil 8, and I'm just like, I am the biggest Village fan that has ever existed.
Right. But no, I feel like I'm definitely going to be playing it day one.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of small stuff in it, too, that I really love. Like what I was saying about Resident Evil 4, they brought back the briefcase mechanic.
Right.
For those of you who don't know, in Resident Evil, your inventory is its own challenge. And that's what makes part of the game so scary is that you don't have this unlimited
inventory.
Given
so many people OCD.
Yeah. And they took that, and in Resident Evil 4, they gave you this briefcase that made it even more specific and refined, that made just trying to fit in, like trying to have a new gun, trying to make that its own little puzzle in the game. And I really loved that, and I'm really happy that it's returning.
But no, the, oh my gosh. But no, I honestly feel like they're doing all of these remakes, because I feel like they're going to stop at 4.
Yeah.
And
I am cautiously excited for a 4 remake.
Because I feel like they're definitely going to make it, like, wider and bigger.
I think 4... I do think that Resident Evil 4 was one of those lightning in a bottle situations.
But the biggest thing that turned me away from it is the tank controls.
Yes, yeah, Leon does is definitely a total tank.
Because I just can't handle the walking and then the shooting.
Yeah, you have to like...
Bit by bit.
Yeah, you have to walk or you can shoot. You can't choose. And I do think that does add a bit to the gameplay.
Right.
It was definitely a relic of older Resident Evil. And I would be excited for a 4 remake. I just hope they don't rewrite it. All of the lines in that game are classics.
Right.
My favorite is when the bell in the town rings and all of the zombies that were chasing Leon.
Where's everybody going?
Yeah. Where's everyone off to? Bingo.
Yeah, but now I think they are, like, they'll remake it. And then, because, like, how with Resident Evil 2, like, a lot of the lines aren't exactly the same.
Yeah.
But, like, they're reminiscent or stuff like that. So I think they will just make it, like a 90s action movie in 2020.
I hope they keep the fun stuff.
But no, with Resident Evil 8, because that was one of the biggest things that surprised me with Resident Evil 7, is them re-implementing characters that have been in the previous games. And I feel like, even though you do see that Chris is in 8, I feel like Leon's also going to show up since...
I do hope Leon does show up.
Since people have been like, oh, it does have a Resident Evil 4 vibe.
Yeah, Leon or Jill, maybe Barry. I would be happy to see one more other big Resident Evil character.
Right.
And my big theory about this Resident Evil 8 game, I saw someone say this, and I've been, like, looking more at it, and every time I, like, see a trailer, it just keeps adding to this. So the whole game is about, you know, these vampire ladies. Can't call them anything else. That's what they are.
Okay.
They kidnap Ethan's baby, right?
Right. Yeah.
So they take his baby. Ethan's going into the village to get his baby back. And so my big theory is that they are going to take that baby, and they are going to try and put the soul or the, you know, the mind of Albert Wesker into it.
Really?
They're going to try and bring back Wesker.
I'd be fine if they didn't bring him back, honestly.
Yeah, but I do think that would be a plot point for this, because if you watch that first trailer, some of the items in the mansion, in the castle in the village, you can see a lot of, like, Umbrella logos. So I do think this, because Wesker went from being this double-crossing police captain that he was in the first game to being this huge monstrous being for the rest of the series that sort of loomed over it until they killed him off in 5. I do think that they could be trying to bring him back, and that's going to be what the big plot is
for 9. Or do you think that'll be like at the end of the game, it'll be like, and Wesker's back, or and then you'll deal with it in the next game?
I think that could be possible. I would like to see Wesker come back. I do like Wesker.
No.
If they're going to stop having Ethan be the main character and, like, bring it back to being about Chris or Leon or Ada, I do think Wesker could be an interesting character to bring back.
Right. But no, I guess to bring this episode to a close, what are your final thoughts of just the gaming industry as a whole? Anything that's been biting at you, something you want to commend them over?
Well,
something you'd like to see replicated more?
Well, honestly, what I'd like to see replicated more is just people really caring about their games.
Yeah.
You know, you see this in indie studios. Indie studios just really, they care about making the game and bringing it out. There's this little indie horror game I'm playing right now called Omori. It's on Steam for $20. I highly recommend anyone buy it. It's this, like, really cutesy RPG that just takes this really horrifying turn. You know, it does a lot of horror stuff better than a lot of big AAA games do.
Right.
Like, I wish AAA games would start looking at their games again as not as products to make money off of, but making them as, you know, what they want them to be. They want them to be like this art form. I don't think we've really had a really big game like that since PT with Silent Hills.
And I do think that'd be another good episode to have you on for, just talking about video games as an art form.
Yeah, I definitely think video games can be an art form, and I also don't think that they don't have to be.
Right.
I don't think video games have to be art. Everyone says all video games are art. But I don't think they have to be.
But I'm like, when I played like Last of Us for the first time, and when you get in the first like opening interaction, and the daughter dies, like I was like, this is cinematic. Like,
it was some heartbreaking stuff. Yeah.
Like, and that is where I feel like a lot of.
And I think if I do ever come on again, we could talk about The Last of Us 2.
Oh.
That's a big thing.
Oh, I'd be out of the loop because I didn't play it.
You didn't play it?
No, I don't have a PlayStation.
You don't have a PlayStation? Mm-mm. No. Okay.
Not by choice. Trust me, I'd have one if I did.
I was going to say, if you had a PlayStation, I'd let you borrow my copy.
But no, I guess my final thoughts game-wise, like I said, I'm going through Cyberpunk again. There's a sale going on, and Dead Cells is $12, and I've heard good stuff about that, but I was like, why does this game sound so familiar? And it's because IGN, like, pretty much copied this dude's review, like, bit per bit. Like,
yes, I remember this.
Like, extreme plagiarism.
Yes, and I will say this, Dead Cells is an amazing game. I love Dead Cells.
Because I'm like, okay, I can't play Hades, so I'll play Dead Cells.
Yeah, Hades, they're both kind of the same thing. Hades is just a top-down roguelike, while Dead Cells is more of a Metroidvania.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So Dead Cells is more of a Metroidvania, and I love Dead Cells. I would play Dead Cells for hours a day when I first got it.
Right. But no, that has been the sixth episode of PopCat. I'd like to thank Griffin for joining me.
Thank you for having me on. I had a lot of fun. I'd love to do this again sometime.
Yeah, we definitely will.